Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Continuing the Conversation. By now you've probably listened to a few episodes, I hope, and have got to know our little group a little bit. We're growing constantly and evolving ourselves, and this conversation's another example of how we get there and, you know, sharing our stories with each other helps us grow and understand our own experience a little more. I thought this conversation was pretty great for that. This is a conversation back in September of 2020 between myself, T-Rex Sephora, Shaboy, X-Magic, Mystic Moose, High AF, and Animal Energy. We discuss everything from dreaming to DMT blast-offs to entities, machine elves, the machines they wield and use, and our theories and thoughts on if that's internal or external, and, you know, so much more. This is a fun conversation. I really hope you enjoy it. Remember, we're not just all in this together. We are this together.
You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of where I'm at. Just like, I still got to do the same thing every day, you know, like make sure I've got food on the table, the lights are on. So in relative actuality of my existence, it could be a fucking alien in there, you know, talking about you guys off to space, and it would still be like, well, I still got to make sure I got food on the table.
Right.
And I know that's kind of naive and like I should pay more attention to it, but that's just the reality of it, you know, like the decisions they're making aren't going to affect me that much.
Well, you know? that's what I, you know, my point is the scales are too big. The scale is just too big that you lose your sense of power or control over where things are going to go. I don't think democracy works on that scale. It works on like a classroom level or a family level or a small village level. It works. You know, you're honest. You know who you're voting for. You know everyone's character. You know exactly directly how things are going to affect you. So you're invested. But in a size of, you know,
maybe getting a state level, but once it gets to 330 million people, it's kind of like,
yeah, out of hand. I mean, yeah, you look at countries like Iceland, something like that, New Zealand, 3 million, 4 million people, and it works great.
Right.
They know everybody, pretty much knows everybody, or you know someone who knows someone who knows someone. So it keeps people honest. It keeps things real.
Yeah. What's up, T-Rex, dude?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We're just
bitching
about the government.
Yeah, no, I was hearing that. I was enjoying that conversation. I think I was actually considering just democracy itself today. And I think it's interesting to hear you say it works. And I don't know what that means. I'm not sure I know what the goal is, I guess.
Right, did you see? It's what?
It's so the rich can get richer and the poor can get poorer.
Yeah, well, no, in that case, it works great.
Yeah.
In that case, yeah, I'm not sure. I think the idea is, well, obviously, the idea is that majority rules, right?
Yeah, right. So if the majority rules, that means the minority is always going to be, you know, being put down, being being forced into submission. So democracy is a general principle, is simply saying that we're going to make everyone bow to the whim of the majority.
That's right.
And now we have all these huge issues with minority populations, and we're finally recognizing, oh, look, we've stomped on people to get where we're at. And guess what? That's the whole point of our system, is that the majority gets a stomp on the minority and tell them what to do. Right. And the struggle isn't who's in power, it's who's the majority. Exactly. And we've seen that shift quite a few times.
Right, and unless the majority is compassionate and wise, it's going to suck for anyone who's not in that majority.
Yeah, and for sure.
Did you see that thing I put up on DMT World about why I think it was Plato, Socrates, why Socrates hated democracy?
Fair enough. I didn't see it. I'm going to have to look it up.
Okay, so basically what he was saying, he's going, it's well and good if everyone who gets a vote is informed, educated, intelligent, wise enough to make the right decision. So that means, you know, free knowledge, open information, transparency. Only then can you make a decision. So right now, you know, the States is a clear example. You're going to watch Fox News, you're going to watch CNN, and they're telling totally different stories. And the people, a lot of the people voting, they're not really qualified. They're not really qualified to make an educated decision about it.
Well, yeah, there's very little that most people would be informed enough to make an intelligent decision.
There are
some things that they would be prepared to answer about, but our system is so complex and has so many moving pieces that it's basically impossible. Even our most well-trained politicians that have spent their whole life just preparing to be politicians, even they aren't fully made aware of the consequences of the decisions they're making.
Cool. And that comes back to that point I was making. The scale is too big.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm curious if there's any scale where democracy isn't just an oppressive system. Like, even at the smallest scale, you still have the minority that's being forced to do whatever the majority says.
Well, like I say, take it on a classroom scale or family scale, even. Scale all the way down to that. Even though you might have five in your family and three decide on one thing, those three know the other two very well and they care about them because they're part of the same community. So they know if they're suffering, it's bad for them. So when it gets to the point where the majority knows that the minority is going to be angry or sad or, you know, unhealthy, then they're going to modulate their decisions.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. Although the only problem I have with the example is that families and classrooms aren't often an actual democracy.
No. Maybe that's
typically in both of those situations.
Mom and dad. Totally. Yeah. Sure. I mean, again, we're talking about ideal things.
I've been a libertarian for decades, so I'm an idealist to the max, typically.
I tend to be, too.
What would the perfect thing look like instead of, I think most people go, what would work?
Well, also, what you guys are saying about, like, people don't understand the consequence, that's kind of what I was saying right before you got on. But with the aspect that poor people don't really have as much luxury to sit around and be concerned about that. They've got to worry about how they're going to survive. I mean, I grew up without electricity half the year.
My audio is on this stuff.
I moved every year of my life. Like, my parents worked 60 hours. We still didn't have that kind of, you know, electricity or a stable home. Like, there's no way they could have been like, okay, I'm going to sit down after work and focus on this, so that way I can make an informed decision. You know, they're more worried about, like, where the fuck are we going to get dinner today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the big problem I see, is the way the system is pushing poorer people to not be educated enough to make a decision.
Well, is that by design?
I think it is. I mean, that's what
are the wealthy people? I understand the like middle class. Once your needs, like your survival needs, are met, yes, you can then spend more free time exploring lofty ideals. But are those people actually well informed on political and social consequences of political actions?
That's the thing, though. They have my point is that they have more of an option to say, hey, I want to go outside and mow my grass right now, or I want to sit and research this because I have the free time to do these things.
Right. Yes.
Like, when a person is put in a situation where they can't even barely meet the needs of survival, that's always going to be priority to saying, let me look at this, absolutely, that, and the other. And from my perspective, like I said, like growing up in really poor communities and a poor household, like you can tell that those people, they're not concerned with politics because they're concerned with staying alive.
Right.
You know?
So the spiral dynamics model, the use that I would, the way I would use it to help in this conversation would be that you have that early like survival stages where that's all you're focused on is like the needs, the shelter, the food, the water, the safety, the defense, the all of that. And then the next stage out of that, that's a very individualistic stage. But then the next one is a collective stage, but it's like a very, very like rule-driven, system-built, like collective, like old Christian church-style collective. And then from there, you move into more of like the modern, they call it the orange, but it's like the capitalist, scientific driven. And I think a lot of people that are stuck in that early survival stage, they've accomplished those goals enough that they're able to move into the next stage. And that next stage is that collective, like dogmatic collective system. And that's where like, sure, they've got the people that aren't voting at all. Those are the survivalists. You know, those are the people that all they can do is deal with getting food on the table. They're not even concerned with voting. But then once you have that stuff covered and you're now just saying, oh, some people have it better, some people have it worse. Well, Team A that I joined, they're, you know, saying I need to vote this way. And then those are the people that you see with Trump hats and Trump shirts and Trump trucks and Trump boats and Trump, you know, everything. Lunch boxes. Like they barely covered the survival stuff, and they're able to move to that next step, which is awesome. And I'm glad they're able to do it. But that next step can get you stuck, because that next step is that dogmatic move. And then after that, you're having to move into a scientific materialism, which is a huge leap from like, I need my needs met. So I don't know. I think that's a fun map to stare at it.
It's an excellent model. I would say that there seems to be on the broad system. So we're in a capitalist system, but it still seems like a lot of people within that system are on survival mode.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, so it's I see that in Japan. I would say probably in East Asia and Asia in general, the people are, well, definitely in Japan, the people, they're too tired and they're too busy to have time to think about things.
Right.
They've got their plasma TV. They've got their $20,000-$30,000 car. They've got their clean apartment and clean water, and they've got their alcohol and their cigarettes. They're just lulled into this. They've got their bellies are full enough so that they won't think and they won't riot. So I think
but empty enough to know that somebody else is getting more.
I don't think they even the majority of people I know in the normal society, they don't even get to that step of asking a question.
Yeah,
it's been educated out of them, and like I said, they're not pushed. They're too tired. They're exhausted from either whatever. If their students are exhausted from studying and doing their club activities, or if they're working 70, 80 hours a week.
That's what I was gonna say too earlier. Like, people here are in that mentality where you work, you know, 5 days a week. Your sixth day of your 7 day week is used on catching up with what you didn't get done during the first 5 days. Then the sixth day is used for like, oh, now I finally get a chance to rest my body.
Yeah.
You know, and that people feel like, oh, they're getting, at least they got that time off, but they're not having enough time off to actually have a clear vision of more.
Yeah, because they're just to get them back on the treadmill.
Right.
And that's the cycle. That's that, you know, the rat yeah. on the exercise wheel going round and round. And this is, seems to be getting, you know, people are working, although technology should be freeing us up, people are working more and more, and real incomes are decreasing.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about, like, I feel like it's sort of set up this way, you know?
It's definitely set up that way because, we go back to the point where the companies, there's many more billionaires, millionaires, billionaires who can't come up to having trillionaires soon, and the multinationals are getting bigger and bigger, but the average go throughout the whole planet, real income is declining and their work is increasing. Right. So there's more they're being more productive and they're getting less back.
Yeah.
And their margin is going to the 1%. I mean, we know all this. So what's the revolution, guys?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been trying to find it for decades now. Where is it? What is it? What's it look like?
Well, you've got some. You must have some DMT. I was going to say pitchfork.
Yeah. If we spike the public water with DMT and Harmless, we're going to be in a better world.
So this guy yesterday, I'm listening to this podcast yesterday on. It's the guy that did all the Spiral Dynamics videos, Leo Gura, who's from Actualize. So he did this breakdown of libertarianism, and I had to listen because I thought it was too good to pass up. Well, the only reason I'm bringing it up now is because toward the end of his chat, he said that he believes that if there are 7,000 or more DMT entities, they most likely have a government, because all groups of about that size require a government. So the DMT entities must have a government, which is intriguing. I want to know what the DMT entities' government is.
Yeah, well, what I would say, my first response to that is, you can't. In my limited experiences, there's nothing in this realm. There's no rules that apply in this realm that can apply in the DMT realm. I think that's the. That's the thing that makes it astonishing.
Yeah, and who concluded there's 7,000 entities?
Well, no, he said that if there are, there's less than 7,000, they could possibly be like, you know, they don't need a bureaucratic system. They can probably get by just working individually. But once you get about 7,000, he said, that's when there has to be a bureaucratic government, because it's the only way a society can function. Which just makes me, I just want to know what an entity bureaucracy looks like.
Well,
like an ethereal bureaucracy. I want to know what it looks like, 'cause I bet it's awesome.
Well, they've got telepathy, right?
Right.
So that makes, they don't have paperwork. They don't have to send
and
emails,
they have the Akashic record, and so they don't have to write anything. It's just always there for them.
Yeah, so that's, you know, it makes it, it puts on a, if they have the Akashic records that they do. Well, I don't know if they've got the, I think they've got different levels of access, right? There's
Right.
definitely lower, there's definitely lower level entities and higher level entities, right?
That I definitely can say yes.
So
I
if you
don't
look at the,
know.
sorry?
I said I don't know if there's lower and higher level entities.
Don't you? Well, you've probably got more experience than both of us two put together in the DMT realm, that's for sure. Don't you find that there's some off to the side? I mean, I'm haven't even had anything close to a breakthrough, but don't you find there's like some off to the side, like not really in the center, and then there's the kind of a bigger, the higher level one is in the center.
Or kind of like one that's the focus, and then there's other people kind of trying to butt in.
Yeah, I
Right,
think
so
that's always how I've kind of felt it too. Like, not necessarily one was more demanding, just one of them was the show that everybody else was kind of like, huh, this guy stopped to watch the show. What's he up to? Maybe I can perform for him.
right.
I always felt like they're like, so in my straightforward view, like looking straight ahead, there's always like the main, like you're saying, like the main show. But then I feel like from the diagonal or from directly left and right, there's like some other entity trying to pull my consciousness that way.
Yeah.
Like look,
Yeah.
wait, like follow me into my
Yeah,
world.
look over here. Look over here. Hey, over here.
It's like the ads that pop up on the side of your computer
Yeah.
screen.
I
It's like pop ups, a little
already
pop
watched that video. It's only 3 minutes long.
up.
Brings up something interesting. Well, when will the next time either of you guys or any of you guys probably try DMT?
Probably Saturday.
Okay. Maybe Sunday, perhaps.
Oh, okay.
Actually, Sunday, actually, it'll be.
Will you
Yeah.
try this for me? Okay, when you take your hit and you break through or you're in the zone, squeeze your eyes more or less sh tighter shut. You know, like
Okay.
you close your eyes and then you're like, okay, my eyes are closed. But then push them shut harder, you know, like keep them shut harder. And then next time I talk to you, tell me the result of this.
All right, we'll do.
Because I've been having an experience. I don't want to say because I want to see what you guys is
Yeah.
re your reaction is before I tell
Okay.
you what my theory is.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, I look forward to hearing once I give it a shot. That's a interesting experiment.
The other day, I think it was, when was it, Sunday? Sunday, I had a hit, and it was a no, that was Saturday, the one I'm talking about now. I had it on Saturday and Sunday. And on Saturday, the first thing was, it was kind of dark oranges, dark red kind of theme going on. And I thought, oh, that's dark. And suddenly, as soon as I thought that's dark, it went to bright yellows, neon oranges. And do you feel you can change the overall theme of it?
Temperature. The temperature is how I've always looked at it. I can definitely change the temperature. I don't know that I'm necessarily changing colors or if I'm changing like brightness, but the way I've always, I guess, thought about it is like in photo, you know, I can kind of shift it from like a bright yellow to a deep blue, you know, like there's something about the temperature that I seem to be able to
Oh, okay.
manipulate. Because I often have a large, this huge yellow pyramid next to me. And I can definitely shift it to where it's like a dark color that's no longer yellow. And I can bring it back to that just through like focusing.
And
But I always, like I said, I always thought it was like a temperature thing. I don't know
what
why.
is
That's
your
always been the way that I've imagined it.
And what is your mechanism of the change? You're thinking of the change?
I think it's been more that like early on there were machines that I was shown, but there was some way I was able to like make them move or make them perform, or and it's it, it's like just shifting something in the room. And I know I have some control of it because it's in my head saying, oh, try this now. But yeah, it's just like a weird shift that I learned doing that, kind of focusing and making the machine turn or churn or flip or whatever it was doing. And then I realized with the pyramid, I can make it like, you know, I could change its temperature. I could like make it, I don't know. It didn't change in form, but there was something about it that just appeared differently. Like it was performing something.
Mm.
And it, like I said, it's often there with me. So I'm standing next to this big, like not gold, like bright yellow pyramid. And I, a lot of times I won't even notice it, but then when I think about it, if I turn my head, it's right there and it's massive, you know, huge, way up in the sky. And I, it'll catch me off guard whenever I play with it. It's always, I'm always messing with it. I don't know what the action is. I just know how it feels. Like there's something in my head that's like, hey, play with it. So I start playing with it. I don't touch it. I'm not like moving my body, obviously. I'm completely broken through, comatose state. But like there's something I'm doing to it that's, I don't know. I don't know what any of the machines do. I've like drawn them all even. When I come back, I like hold on to parts of them and I hold on to pieces. Like I'm playing with them. Things are being shown to me. But I don't know what any of this shit is. That's always the most interesting thing about the DMT trip for me, is like the connection that it gives me to the ethereal voices or guides or whatever I want to call them. That's the part that's like really helped me personally suffer less. But the pictures and the fun stuff and the machines and the little guys dancing around the machines and shit. Like, I don't know what any of it means. I don't even have a good guess. Like I'm years into this. I have no fathoming, no reaching thought even what the fuck is going on over there.
Have you read the DMT dialogue?
Yes, I have.
So Dennis McKenna's, his idea is that they're showing us a vision of what we can be.
Yeah, but you know, I can be some weird spaghetti monster machine that like rotates and grinds, and
You can be the technician operating it.
Yeah, but what is he doing?
He's operating it. He's like,
what's it creating? Or is it?
He's making the pasta sauce.
No super.
Yeah, no idea. I have a question because like I said, I don't think I've really come close to breaking through. I haven't even really tried, and hopefully I'm going to be trying this weekend. if I can garner the courage. So when you say, for example, when you say there's a pyramid standing next to me, are you in the picture?
My consciousness, but not my form. It's not like I can look down and see myself, but I take up space and things typically move when I'm moving. Yeah, they'll move out of the way, you know. They don't want me to go through them.
I can move.
I can shift around, but I can't like move my hand. I can just move where my consciousness is at, you know. And I can change direction, so I seem to have like a directional vision.
So I'm still
disorienting.
Kind of. Yeah, this weekend when I went in, it was the second time on this when it was I had a beautiful one on Saturday and a dark kind of challenging one on Sunday, and for some reason on Sunday I thought, I thought I'll be normal when I get there and I'll be able to control it. And then when I went through, I have no fucking clue what's going on. I left my body completely, and it's still, I feel like a newborn because I'm such a retard in that space. I guess you get some kind of skill at working your way around that space.
I've definitely read that, but I certainly never got there.
That's the thing. Go ahead, shall we?
No, Kurt, I was going to say, Kurt, yeah, you tell us.
I was going to say, I noticed when I first was trying DMT, like the first 10 or 15 times even was the come up was really fast and the experience was really fast. But now I could take a hit and break through and get up and walk through the house, like in full breakthrough.
Wow. You know?
Not that I do, but like I could, if I open my eyes, I can, you know, like it's after you get more used to it, like, you know, really used to it, you can, it doesn't come on as fast, you know, like it's not like a rocket ship anymore. It's kind of like you hit it, you've got time to put the pipe down, you exhale, then it's still like, okay, here it comes. Then you go into it. And if you have to, you can pull yourself out of it. But then your open eye visuals are kind of like, whoa, this is a weird ass world I'm in. You know, I mean, I've had some really interesting experiences with in the middle of the breakthrough being pulled out of that mindset, like obviously from the cat, you know, like being like, whoa, like this is weird, like some shit that I would never have imagined possible on any other psychedelic, you know, like very weird stuff. Like I was able to feel the air and actually totally like compress the air and feel gravity or whatever it was pushing my arms outward. And then another time, for whatever reason, I opened my eyes and everything in my house became transparent. Like the sofa and the chairs and like shit like that all became like outlines and transparent. And then I looked at my hand and my whole arm lit up like a super bright glowing light. And I was like, I thought about it and I was like, holy shit, like my arm is lighting up. Not just like, you know, like sometimes when you're on acid, it's like, whoa, there's an aura around that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking like it was like bright, like it was made of LEDs. And then I thought I want the energy to come out of my hand. Like I want it to beam out. And I thought about it. And then from the palm of my hand, it like flowered out, you know, it was fucking wild.
And that's in like during full breakthrough.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm talking like
all the way deep. You're able to open up and see your body.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not, I mean, like when you first open your eyes, everything is normal. Like, whoa, everything's normal. But then after like
then it starts.
3 seconds, it like shifts back into this weird DMT realm, but wide awake. Like, and it's always been for me, like, I mean, I've like smoked DMT and like I'm going to leave my eyes open. And it's weird, but when you're in full, I'm talking full breakthrough, like, whoa, shit, like I'm in another world right now, you know?
Right.
I mean, like, my cat would jump on my lap or something would knock something off and I'd open my eyes and look around. Like, it was like, whoa, like this world is weird. Like, it's a bit kind of like Nintendo game a little bit, but then another time it was kind of like being inside of a crystal. Mm. You know, it's really weird. Like, and only once did I actually say, like, I'm really in this bizarre zone right now. I'm going to get up and walk around. And I was, like, outside. And I just, like, stood up and started, like, spinning in circles around the yard. And my whole world was, like, it was fucking nuts. And then I fell down and was, like, duh.
Oh, my.
But I'm not sure that there's... From my perspective, very much more to gleam off of an open eye experience than a closed eye experience.
Right. I think you can, I tend to agree. I don't think you can, there's only so far you can go in on a shamanic perspective. We're talking about the open eye, we're going to be a middle world experience.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, it was very weird. Like, I know this isn't what's normal right now. You know what I mean? Like, normal as in where I'm sitting right now in my house, I can just look at the computer, blah, 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 blah. It was more like I'm tripping. You know?
Yeah.
This is the effect of the substance. Whereas, like, when it's the closed eye breakthrough experience, it's more like you're entering into their reality. Alternate reality. That being said, it did to an extent make me think of different things, like how different occult practices are based on these sort of vibrational movements and this, that, and the other. It to a degree helped me think about that stuff, but at the same time I was like, is this always there, or am I just under the influence right now?
Right, you're seeing stuff that you otherwise can't normally see.
Right. Whereas, like you know, there's that thing where you're always questioning, like, is this stuff really there, or am I just thinking it's there? Am I just under the influence or whatever? And I haven't had enough experience with the open eye situations to really determine, like, wait a minute, are these things always here, or am I just really able to
use my... Early on in my exploration, there was, like I said, this pyramid's been part of it for a very long time. So I would realize that, you know, toward the end of the breakthrough, I could open my eyes and, like Shboy just said, like, middle world type experience, you know, like I was in their realm. And then when I come back, there's like this 5-minute period where my eyes open and I can, you know, stuff is still active. And there's this middle world experience where it's like overlaid on this world.
Right.
And that pyramid, I always smoked at the same place. Like, when I first started getting into it, I had a spot, and that was where I was comfortable and felt like I knew everything, what everything needed to happen there. And it was like my right set and setting. But then I kept seeing this pyramid. When I would come back, it would come with me. And like, I would see it, like I said, always hanging out in the corner of my eye. And I was like, okay, is this thing like exactly in the same space as like it does over there? And I'm like able to see it when I use this stuff. So then I started going to different places and doing it, and that's when I realized, well, that thing's always seems to be locked to me, but that doesn't mean it's locked to the space and time that I'm sitting in waking reality or whatever. So it was like, that was my little exploration of that idea, and I've definitely dove into it more, trying to figure out, like, Is there anything that is like an anchor from this world to the other? Or are we the anchor? Or are the entities the anchor? Like, are these machines things they drag around, and we're just catching that time and space with them when we're there? I don't know. I've played with that idea a lot, because I think it's the whole idea that there's their dimension and our dimension, and somehow they meet. How does that meeting take place? That intrigues me.
Well, I would say that it seems that the anchor is this. A key point is whether your eyes are open or shut. Because you can't be there when your eyes are open, right?
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
And that you can.
The member I told you about the experience I had where I had went in, met this goddess, and then I was like, how can I contact you again?
All right, yeah.
Came out of the experience, made the the sound that she said, this is, make this sound and you'll be able to get back to me. And then when I came back, I listened to the sound, broke through again, and it was all mental until I chanted the last part she told me to chant. And then my, with open eye visuals from like open eye laying on my floor and what was normal, it wasn't all DMT'd out or anything, just
right. Normal,
you know, kind of glittery or whatever, but not like, whoa, I'm tripping out, you know? Then when I did the chant, literally, like I said, my chest opened up and a blue light radiated out of it.
Okay.
And my whole environment with open eye visuals became that breakthrough world.
Oh, okay, well, there goes that theory. Okay, right. So I guess is what you're calling is magic. You've used an incantation,
yeah,
to bring this other realm into this realm. So that's magic there, isn't it? That's shamanism.
Yeah.
Which that's the whole purpose of me saying to them, how can I? What first? What is your real name? What is your real name? And show me your true form. Because if they won't show you their name or show you their true form, according to occult philosophies, they're trying to do you harm.
Right.
Okay. And then that's why you say that. Then how can I contact you again? And if they give you a visual symbol or an audio or whatever, that's how you can draw their world into our earthly plane. In a cult.
They don't have like, they don't give you like a URL or a phone number or something like that.
Well, that's basically what the sigil.
Yeah, but that would be, imagine that they gave you, look me up on, check out my Instagram.
Yeah. Well, if they got a government, they probably have their own Instagram too. I need to get in on the entity Insta. I bet it works way better.
A thing though, I always, when I first started experimenting, people will say, oh, you'll break through. But I've noticed there's various levels of breakthrough. There's what I originally considered breakthrough, which is full, like, whoa, I'm in the DMT realm. But then there's like breakthrough level number 5. And in my scale of 5 levels that I've created. And that realm is much different than the standard, like, whoa, I'm watching an entity do his thing and all of these little shapes and colors. That to me, like the realm where there's no more movement in the DMT experience, like there's no more little DMT insects running around, or no shapes moving, and no entity.
Stable.
Yeah, it's you're actually sitting, or your consciousness is actually in a room, like a space. Always, every time I've been in one of these spaces, they've been non-defined in a sense that they're like the sky. You can tell it's there, it's a thing, but there's no boundary to it, you know?
Like a void?
Like, not, I wouldn't say a void, but I'd say more like, kind of like outer space, like all-encompassing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Know? Yeah, I've definitely been to the place where the breakthrough is beyond, you know, beyond.
Right, and in stuff, that...
Where it's just everything.
Yeah, that to me is where the money is, dude. Like, that's where you're going to learn something, where I do anyway.
Yeah.
The other experiences obviously are awesome, and you do learn stuff from them too. But when you transition to that point, to me is where it's more like you're experiencing like one-on-one communication rather than,
yeah,
hey, I'm watching the DMT show.
Right, yeah. Right. No, I definitely think for me, being able to see like the oneness happen when it got to that point, you know, before it was like, hey, look at this crazy world over here. And then when I pushed it that far, it was like, holy shit, I know that we're all the same thing. And it wasn't like something told me that. I felt it and knew it. Like,
right. Yeah.
And this is it. Like, we're all this right here, you know? And this I could never explain and still can't. But, like, this is it, you know? And I knew that. Felt it. I saw it. I experienced it. And it was in that place where there was just, you're past it all. You flew straight past the entities into whatever it is.
Yeah, I've never had that feeling of like, whoa, I'm with the divine in this DMT world. I only had that feeling from astral projection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that gave that to me.
Is that the dosage related? How much you get in you, or is that just your set is at the time?
Yeah, I'm so bad with dosages that I always just go stupid big and I take whatever it gives me. Sometimes I don't get past the waiting room, whatever they want to call it. Other times I'm through the moon. Could it be that some of my supply is a little stronger than others? Maybe. Did I weigh it improperly? Probably. So, like, I have so much trouble gauging that stuff. My scientific mind isn't attuned enough to do that shit.
Yeah, I've never weighed it, ever. I just grab my little vulture claw and I'm like 4 scoops with the vulture claw.
I know what worked, so I just always scoop about that much and say, go for it. Keep going.
Yeah.
And I usually overload everything because the way I do it out of like the crack pipe style is if it doesn't burn up, it's still in there. So later I can go back to it. So I've never been like, I need to measure out the right amount. No, I'm just like, fuck it, get enough.
Right. Okay. That's good advice. I'm probably going to do the crack pipe style this weekend.
It's not like you're wasting it. It's still in your pipe.
So. Right. Well, I've been using Changa.
The last
7 or 8 times, but I've made it way too weak. So like I'm taking 5 big rips on a bong, and I'm still okay. So you guys are talking about this waiting room breakthrough. So what I'm seeing is this typical kind of Alex Gray things, like head looking at each other, things turning impossibly inside out.
That's typical breakthrough stuff.
Yeah. Am I breaking through there?
Whenever I hear somebody say, am I breaking through, I'm hesitant to say yes. Because I feel like it's an experience that I couldn't have second guessed. It was so powerful that it was unlike, you know, even unlike a trip. It was unlike a acid trip or unlike a mushroom trip. It was so foreign and unusual that I like, to me, that's just my definition of breakthrough. That's what I've called it because to me it was so unusual it couldn't have been anything else.
Well, every time is like that for me. But yeah. So what's below that? Is the stuff below that believable?
Well, this is the thing. When you're seeing this stuff, it's like all encompassing. It's not kind of like, whoa, I'm kind of catching a glimpse of this.
You're not only
catching it with your eye closed, or you're not only catching it if you hold a certain position. It's like, this stuff is smacking you in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like, I mean, if you're seeing like kind of Alex Gray painting style stuff, or like comes from an Aztec imagery kind of thing, right?
It's not very stable, though. It's just generally kind of moving too much. The last time it was kind of, I could get an idea, like I can remember what I saw.
Yeah, it's always going to be in motion.
Yeah.
Like, right.
For me anyway, until I reach that spot where it's like the motion is going, it'll be like kind of like this, like the motion is going, then all of a sudden the sort of peripheral motion will stabilize, but the central dynamic will be doing something, then that will stabilize, and then it'll transition into that what I was saying before about like an all-encompassing space. But that, to me, that's only happened a few times, and I consider that like above a standard breakthrough.
Yeah,
In my unless maybe I've those are actually the only two times I've broken through, but the other 90 some times that I've done it definitely are what I would have considered like, oh, this is what people call a breakthrough, because it's like, you know, you sitting there with your eyes closed and it's like watching the most bizarre animated sci-fi La La Land graphic you've ever seen in your life, you know?
Well, see, that's always been my experience, and I'm not taking great amounts. So what is it below that? That's what I'm saying. Every time I take it, and mostly it's been Changa lately. So I get into this thing, and it's like I'm lying on my back, and the vision is the entire sky. There's no mountains. It's complete horizon around, and I've got this full dome of vision. Dome is weird. Yeah, well, dome. And every part of it is crazy shit going on. It's like, and I've had different kind of themes. It's been this kind of carnival theme where there's fucking things going off everywhere. And the last one was kind of big, solid face kind of things looking into each other and turning in and out of each other. But I haven't met any kind of single, I've got an inkling of an entity like looking at me, but haven't had any direct kind of communication with them, or they haven't been the main thing. They've kind of been on the furthest layer out of these multi dimensions that I'm kind of looking at. But what would you
say?
How does that sound?
This idea of you're always going to meet an entity is kind of blown up. It's, in my experience, you're not always interacting with an entity.
Mm-hmm.
You're more watching some humanoid figure dance.
Yeah.
Or something. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're sitting there like, hi, Mr. Entity, it's nice to meet you. You know what I mean? It's more like you're like, whoa, this is a weird humanoid type creature dancing and transmuting into weird shapes and shit. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the experience, you know, before breakthrough, or like a experience with incredibly low dose that I don't feel like I've reached a breakthrough, that I would call a waiting room or call, you know, a light stage open-eyed system, you know, like that stuff for me has always been more like I get the auditory clairvoyant connection where I can talk to an entity, like I can speak to this inner voice that isn't my normal inner voice, but I somehow believe is my true inner voice, whatever that is. Anyway, I get a connection with that, and then closed eye visuals are intense. So if I shut my eyes, shit goes crazy. But if I open them, everything's clear, and I'm still like in full control of myself. And whenever I go harder than that, when I feel like I've lost control, when it doesn't matter if my eyes are open or closed, when the entities aren't necessarily talking to me or communicating with me, and they're just putting on some show along the side of my vision or something, you know, I guess that's what I've always considered that waiting room area, where I just didn't quite make it, where I never got to a point where I left and like disconnected, disoriented from my form. That's always been, but the voice thing, like the clairvoyant type thing, like or clairaudient or whatever, where I can mm-hmm. speak to this entity and I can hear their answers, and they'll even talk with my mouth if I let them. Like that stuff happened for me after really big experience where I went all the way through, and when I came back this voice was there, and I started interacting with it. And now when I don't go deep into the realm, that voice is right there with me from the beginning, and when I do go deep in the realm, that voice is there when I get back. It's not there while I'm over. When I get back, they're like, hey, what'd you think? And if I talk to them, they'll talk right back to me and give me, you know, it's not advice, but
is it the same voice?
Most of the time, yeah. There's been a couple of voices that have come through, but it's almost always the same voice, and it's in my voice. Like, it's so weird. It's so disorienting because it's my voice, but I'm not putting those words there. Mm-hmm. And through meditation and breathwork stuff and all that, I can actually get to that voice now without DMT. I can find that voice and it's there and I can talk with it. But it's mm-hmm. like, it when I'm in that place, it talks to me. You know, it's like, hey, you're here, let's chat. But when I'm going there without DMT, it's like I have to really seek it out and really like do the work of intentionally pulling them to me, or whatever them, it. I'm not defining it because I have no fucking clue what's going on.
So I've noticed there's kind of like a, for me anyway, there's kind of like a level system of intensities. So if I take just like a small toke for whatever reason, like I'm not getting it lit or burnt or whatever properly, I'll just get like a weird feeling where like I'll feel my brain kind of light up and then my body will feel like it's floating. But no visual effect. Then the mm-hmm. second level would be the same body feeling, except my open eyes will kind of get a little bit sort of acid-y, mushroomy type visual, you know, like maybe like the pattern or the ball will look weird. Then third level is what I considered the waiting room, from after having tried it and talked to people, where it's like you'll close your eyes and you'll have visuals that are like not quite a breakthrough, not quite all encompassing of your consciousness, but they're still visuals. Then level four would be what to me sounds like what you were describing, Shaboy, like visuals, like all encompassing visuals, you know. And then level five would be what I was describing before, like all of the crazy psychedelic weirdness of all encompassing DMT realm sort of comes to a standstill and you're directly in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like levels.
I would honestly say if you're questioning whether or not you broke through, do a one-hit breakthrough, you know, like mm-hmm. straight in like one of these, you know, in a vape thing or you know, one of these like meth pipe type deals, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know how you're gonna weigh it out, but
I'm gonna do the T-Rex method. I'm just gonna
fill
it up. Well, now that I know that it's becomes a storage device as well.
Yeah, right. As long as you're not cooking it afterwards, it just hardens in there.
Right, yeah. And if I'm doing it through that kind of through the meth pipe, it's I'm doing it with other people because I need someone to spot me because I'm gonna drop it and burn the house down. So I'm gonna be doing it with my crew, and I'm sure there'll be someone to step up and take what's left over.
Oh yeah.
Hit it, and this what I always do to know I'm gonna get to the breakthrough point. Like if I usually put a little bit more than I need to, because for one, you got to get it going before you can hit it, and then sometimes it'll just stop smoking up. You know, like I've never smoked meth or crack before, so for me this is like a first learning how to use this pipe. You know,
yeah, that's what I'm. And
there's a huge
out.
Learning curve for sure. Getting that vapor to coil right is like the trick of it, and it definitely helps to have spent like a couple hundred hours smoking meth.
But the way that I would suggest you know you're gonna get a break, you know, once you got it, you can see that it's smoking. When you go to hit it, do a count. What this is what I do. I'm like 1, 2, 3. You know, a little slower than that. I'm like 1, 2, 3. And I count to like 10, sometimes 12, 13, depending, you know, And then once I know I got above 10, 11, I know when I exhale, I'm going to have a breakthrough point, you know?
Yeah.
Because anytime I've been like, okay, I'll do it 8 count, it's always like, oh, yeah. I didn't quite get there.
On the weekend, I was about the fourth hit off the bong. I was counting. And when I got to about 4, I'm there, yeah, numbers, what are they? Sequence, what's that all about? Numbers. Like, oh, 8, 9.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, dude. With those like meth pipe things, dude, if you're hitting it, you're going to know if you're going to break through. Because,
oh, hell yeah.
Especially like when I first was using it, dude. Before I even got done inhaling, that shit was kicking me.
Yeah.
Like I could feel my brain light up and my body like, uh-oh. And I'd be like, oh shit, I gotta put this pipe down.
My first time was with Changa. Then I did first time I had like real crystal and got out the crack pipe and like did it right. It was like the second the shit touched my mouth, I was gone.
Yeah, it's
like it didn't wait at all.
Before you even breathe it out, it's everything's right. Like, oh,
yeah,
fuck. They're
just like, oh, what did I do?
I'm getting scared just fucking thinking about it because I've been doing Changa. I've been Changa, which is like a fucking easy like Sunday morning compared to that shit.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good.
Did I lose you guys?
No, I'm still here.
We hear you. So a little bit off topic of DMT, but on my first ayahuasca ceremony, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh. X might have. Hello, X.
Hear noise. X
seems. Yeah, I think he's got bad reception. Oh, there he is. His reception goes in and out. Anyway, my first ayahuasca hit, after about 15 minutes of drinking it, everything started warping out. The table with the white cloth started, like, twisting, and the candles were tripping out. And I went and laid down, and I was in a very... It's ayahuasca, so it's got the MOI in it. Yeah. I was in an extremely stable place. I was in a jungle. I was seeing a jungle. I was there. I could look around. So like what you were saying on a breakthrough, I was looking around. I could look up and down. I wasn't there, but I could control where my vision focused on. And I was in this, it's just like one of those ayahuasca paintings. I was in a jungle. And with super vibrant colors, and everything was super delineated, but it was still, in a way, three dimensional. But I could see in 4 and 5 and 6 dimensions. Like I could, if I wanted to, I could see from above. If I wanted to, I could see the inside of the tree. So it kind of flitting, but it was very solid. Yeah. It was very stable. There was nothing moving or spinning lights. Not like a DMT thing. There was nothing moving. And then these two massive, they could have been 20 kilometer long, serpents came towards me. But that was extremely stable. So, I know. I wonder if that's achievable through DMT. Have you ever had done Pharmacusa?
Yeah. So I've messed with rue and with vine. So I've definitely had both of them with, I did one with a tea. I did one that was like the traditional brew where I just boiled the vine and the P. vitrellis or whatever. Other time was with rue extract and with the extracted molecule. So I've done it both ways, and I much preferred with like the extracts. Drinking that tea is rough.
Oh yeah, sure.
But I thought it was really cool. And even just like smoking DMT after drinking some rue tea kind of stabilizes mm-hmm. things. I'm not going to mm-hmm. say stable because it's you're going way further, but it's slower somehow. You know, it's not as mm-hmm. a kick in the pants. It's a right. little more, and it lasts, you know, 30, 45 minutes,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. Okay. But it does kind of stabilize, like you said. Kind of slows things down.
I've got a little bit of 10 times extract soon root extract left.
Yeah.
I might try doing a tea. But it's just that doing that drinking it's just that the diet you've got to adhere to.
Yeah, that's so hard, fucking rough.
And so if rough. I'm gonna do it, I wanna do it properly. I wanna do 2 weeks beforehand and you know, no salt and no, you know, no nothing. I want to do it the kind of traditional way. You don't have to do it that strictly.
No, no, I think there's a definitely a time and a place for that whole ritual, though, for sure.
For sure. And I mean, I guess that the when your diet is that strict, it makes your intention, you're always thinking of your intention right. because you realize, right. shit, I'm cooking without all these things. So, yeah, I think it's as much as that setting your intention and a commitment to the process.
For sure. For sure. And I want to go down and actually experience it in the jungle and see what the whole scene is.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
I was hoping to get there this summer. But,
yeah.
yeah,
the summer definitely slowed my travel down.
Yeah, so. Didn't it? Anyway, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm going to bounce off of here.
Okay,
we lost X.
We lost X. A few other people tuned in, but didn't talk by the looks of it.
Yeah.
I saw Moose was on there, but anyway.
Hey, guys. We've been here listening. Everything you guys have said has been so fascinating. We're just kind of like doing different things at the same time, but I've been enjoying the conversation.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, this is like my favorite topic now. I feel like this is the thing where
I wouldn't have noticed.
I don't have the experience to speak from, but it's super interesting to hear you guys describe. Like I'm hoping for my second time this coming weekend.
Oh, I lost you there. I'm breaking up.
Steven, we lost you yet.
The more I hear about like what to expect, as I'm saying that, I know you're all. Anyway, it's just.
Fair enough.
I
wish technology was cleaner.
Yeah, not yet.
No, not there yet. Oh, sweet.
Hello?
Hello, who is it?
Hello, hello?
Room service.
So, T-Rex, I wanted to ask you just one question about mescaline.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You're the cactus guy. Do you normally normally extract it or you take it? You just boil it down.
I usually just drink cactus tea. It's so much easier. It's so mescaline extraction is so fucking hard and time consuming and there's so many goddamn steps and processing it. So you basically make the tea, and then you extract it from that. So
you
pretty much whenever you boil it down, and then you do an extraction. Mm-hmm. Usually by the time I got it boiled down, I'm like, all right, I put too much time into this. I'm just drinking it.
Right.
Because the extraction is a huge process. It really is. It's such a pain in the balls. It is cleaner, and it is. It's like the difference. the body load difference is just so huge. When you have extracted, like, just crystals, it's so clean, like the cleanest acid, but you're just like, you know, with the earth, because it's the cactus god, you know, like, mm-hmm. it's so invigorating. Whereas drinking the tea, you're grounded hard for like a few hours, because that body load from drinking that much cactus is just absurd. And I've even, when I first got into cactus, I would just fucking eat the thing. Like, I'd literally despine it and just gnaw on it. And it was just ignorance. I just hadn't learned how to do it properly. But it worked, you know?
It's meant to be disgusting, right?
Oh, it's just fucking terrible, man. Like, the flavor you get when you put, like, a 9-volt battery on your tongue, it's like chewing on that. Like, it is so acidic and, like, sharp and just gross. It's the nastiest thing. But to me now, like, for me, cactus is one of those things that, like, once I taste it, I'm like, oh, shit. Like, it's not good, but I know where this goes. Because it's a trip like no other. Like, it's a whole different thing.
Cool, man.
But peyote is the way to do that. If you can get a hold of that, peyote is nice because you just don't have to eat very much of it. You can have like 4 or 5 buttons and you're gone. Whereas San Pedro, you got to eat a couple feet of cactus.
Right.
Drop. I hope you can find something to grow over there, man.
Well, yeah, so do I.
I'm sure somebody's got it. We got to find you a cutting. Get your little cactus garden going.
Yeah, I hope so. Let's see. Let's see if it comes to me. I've been putting it out there.
Yeah, keep doing it. It'll show up.
I'm sure. Even if it means me getting out into the desert somewhere.
Hang on.
Okay, man.
Good idea anyway.
Okay, we're gonna tie this up.
Hell yeah. It's good to talk to you, brother.
Yeah,
IAF Animal. Love you.
Yeah.
Talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, love you all. See you on Marco Polo.
Yes.
Hell yeah. Marco.
Yeah, good to hear from you guys.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Always.
Enjoy the evening.
Always good. Yeah, see you guys.